Well, that's today's Concert Billboard. Tune in every day to hear where your favorites are playing, or maybe to try something different. The online concert billboard at WUSB.FM has schedules for the months ahead, so you know what to look forward to. And look for the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook, where there are often some last-minute shows. The WUSB Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6:01 time, once again, for Off the Wall. Very good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this hot, humid Tuesday afternoon, evening. You know, it doesn't really make a difference anymore. And actually, soon I'll be out of here because this is my last live show for the month. There'll be some travel shows coming up, taped last winter, because I'll be traveling this summer, and that's just the way it goes. The summer travel shows will probably air sometime in the winter. Yeah, I wish we could do it faster. I wish there was a way this kind of thing could be done live, but that's just not how it goes here in this particular program. But I think it sounds really interesting. We have all kinds of fun things that we document in various parts of the world. Now, today is no exception, actually, because today is actually the conclusion of another travel series. We've been featuring the cross-country trip that I took in the month of June. When I was driving a friend's car to Arizona and making my visit to the first Starbucks, or my first Starbucks, and basically the trip culminated with a trip to Seattle, where I visited Kyle, and who you hear very often on this program, and you'll be hearing again in future programs. This next piece here is basically a summation of the things that we did over there in Seattle. Now, I should warn you. I should warn you that it's a little noisy sometimes because we recorded this next to an airport. yeah, it's true, we did. And there was some wind, and it might be a little rough in spots, but I think it captures the spirit of a very interesting and amazing place, and for me, the highlight of the entire trip. So tune in. We'll be back live right after this feature. And now, Off the Wall in Seattle.
Anyway, so here we are. Kyle, this is amazing. I'm here in your town. Yeah. I'm here. This has never happened before. Well, I mean, it's happened, but I didn't know you when I was in Seattle last.
Right.
You've spent so much time in New York. Here I am in Seattle after having spent an amazing last few days just seeing your place, seeing your world. And right now, just to describe the scene, because it's probably going to become apparent very quickly, we're right smack next to an airport, not SeaTac Airport, not the major international hub, but the one that has dogs running around. There's two dogs about to kill each other next to us. That's cool. We're sitting in a park across from Boeing Field, and you might very well hear an airplane go by as it starts to land. But not only that, and I'll give you a chance to really go into detail on this, but we're next to a train line of freight lines, Amtrak, the Sounder Regional Rail. There's an interstate. I can see it from here. A couple of highways. You know, normally I would say a situation like that, my God, the noise must drive you crazy. All this industry around, all this frenetic activity. But I can honestly say, after having spent a good amount of time, nearly a week, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. It's incredible to see all this happening around and just to feel the activity and to be like sort of in the middle of the machine. And it's so relaxing too. And I get it now in a way I really never thought I could achieve. So, wow, is all really I have to say.
Yeah, I'm sure glad you got to see it kind of through my eyes a bit, I'd say. And yeah, we've enjoyed ourselves. There's a lot that goes on in this area. This region's sort of the urban epicenter, you know, for Washington. Seattle's a pretty big city, and the south end, the south downtown, and I don't know, the western part of Washington State in general is very active. And so, yeah, here we are. And this is Ruby Chow Park, right near the north end of Boeing Field.
I think I hear a plane approaching. Is that true? Oh, my God! Dude, that's the Dreamliner.
Oh, yeah. I think... No, that's
it said Dreamliner on it.
No, that's the new 737, actually.
But it said Dreamliner, ANA Dreamliner. It did say that on it. I read it, so it's
right,
lying.
Maybe they painted it for a customer.
So, now... It's unusual because that was a huge plane. I mean, compared to most of the planes that come in here, they're you know, not tiny, but private jets, things like that, prop planes. And, wow, do you hear that?
That's the reverse thrusters.
Or it might be the wind, because the wind just kicked up, too, so I'm not sure what the microphone's picking
up.
That's
called jet blast.
Wow. The plane didn't do that, did it?
It can affect the weather. I mean, you can get wind, residual wind.
Did the plane make the wind we just felt? Are we controlling the weather now?
Wow.
Well, anyway,
that is on the larger side of the planes that come in here, but Boeing Field's really unique. I grew up around SeaTac, which is a commercial airport, and Boeing is BFI. It's an international airport, and it supports a lot of, like, special purposes and general aviation, small prop planes like the one you just heard. And so I kind of like it because I grew up with commercial stuff, and this is a lot more diverse, so you get helicopters and small general aviation planes on up to those larger commercial planes that are not in use for commercial purposes, but they're like pre-delivery for...
Yeah, they're not painted, some of them.
Some of them not painted. They come in from being assembled, and the paint shop, I think, is here in the south downtown area at Boeing Field. And so they come in for their final delivery so all the tags and everything has to be right on the interior and stuff. And there's a lot of other special purpose stuff here at the airport, including some freight, major package handlers that we could guess.
So UPS and yep. FedEx and DHL.
Right, all of those usual suspects come in through there. I don't know, quite a bit of other stuff. There's some military stuff occasionally.
Yeah, we saw some crazy-ass jets go flying over the other day.
Yeah, and even some old World War II, early mid-century aircraft And some of them looked like the faster ones were military. I think there were also some private ones. Some people, you know, you buy an old military plane and fix it up for like an air show. I think there were a couple of those going off this weekend. And then also the classic ones, like the classic warplanes. I know there were a couple of those going out this weekend. We've really enjoyed it, though. And then, of course, 747s and all the major commercial planes that come in.
Yeah, it's so cool to see them and just to hear different sounds going off and say, hey, what was that? And looking to see what kind of train just passed by, what kind of plane. And speaking of trains.
Definitely one industry, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
You saw a train a few months ago that was basically carrying plane part, like fuselages of future airplanes, right?
Yeah, and I labeled it, I made a video called Planes on Trains. And I, basically had videoed right out my window these new aircraft coming down by rail to be assembled. And they weren't painted or anything, but they're attached to the rail cars. And they sent them down the tracks.
And what's this coming now? Is it a private plane?
It's like a Kenmore Air. It's like a regional travel plane.
Wow, so passengers are on that thing, huh?
Yeah, that's a small travel company that's really local here. They basically go, it's sort of like a bush plane for this area, for Seattle. So if you need to go out to Idaho or you need to go out to like semi-remote places, you could get a ride with them and they'd take you with your luggage and everything.
So I hear a helicopter now too.
Yeah, that's the TV.
That's King 5, I believe.
Yeah, that's the NBC affiliate.
I actually can watch that station from my house in New York, from my Canadian dish.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you can.
But you know, it seems to me that the sky here is just really, really busy. There's airplanes and helicopters going all different directions, and they really do keep track, right? And this is only one airport. There's another airport a few miles away, SeaTac, the big one.
Correct. Right. Those are a little higher up, but they do fly over as well.
It's weird because, for instance, in Queens, I was telling you this.
Yeah.
We have airplanes flying over all the time, going to LaGuardia, going to Kennedy. It's viewed generally as a pain in the ass because it's loud. It's just something that people don't view as a positive thing. But here, I sense a kind of pride that these planes are made here. Boeing is here. It's part of what this region is all about. And I don't really get the same sense that it's a pain. I mean, you showed me the house you grew up in, and the planes are flying right over that house, too. And it's a good thing. It's a cool thing to see that.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, there's been a huge contingent of local people that have been upset about airplane noise. And I think that does happen in other parts of the country. There was a movement, the International Airport for Commercial Flights here, SeaTac, added a third runway, and people were pretty upset about that, and there were meetings and all kinds of discussions with the Regional Transit Authority and people putting out signs, and you know, it was a lot of drumming up of rhetoric, and you know, because people do have to live under this stuff, and that's I don't know, I've taken an interest in the science and efficiency and sustainability, and I sort of look at it as something we can improve upon, because I think it is magical. I think flight's really amazing. So that industry alone, I mean, they do make noise, but they're getting quieter and stuff like that. And I hope for the amazing parts of it to win over, you know, some of the side effects, especially for local people. Cause, you know, out in the suburbs, I guess if you have CCNA or you have like a nice neighborhood, you can, and you're political and you have your little local groups, you can do that. I think in the city, it's more like people kind of forget about it. They just live with it and kind of deal. So I think there's less protest here in the city. They just sort of don't have a lot of residences down here, and that's one of the reasons I like this particular neighborhood. It's not an ordinary place to live at, being surrounded by a highway, trains, an airport, and other kinds of industry.
Let's talk about that, because this neighborhood particularly is pretty magical. It's Georgetown, which is a part of Seattle, and it's got this really kind of East Village-type feel to it. A bunch of streets have train tracks that go right down the middle. In fact, a couple of nights ago, we were in a bar about 2 in the morning, and this long freight train just kept going down the street really slowly, like 3 miles an hour, blowing its horn, you know, and that mournful sound that you hear in urban parts of the States, and then just doing that for a while, then backing up, doing the same thing again for a half an hour, 45 minutes. This is what happened. This is what apparently having that kind of a thing in your town is all about. I guess they're moving cars around or something all night long. But it's one thing I do like about this country is the freight lines, how many of them there are. It's a shame we don't have as many passenger lines as freight lines, but they're everywhere, and it's a great way to get things moved around. And it's just such a cool part of an urban setting, too, when you see trains doing that, just sort of pulling in slowly and going down streets and interacting with the whole community. But Georgetown in itself is just a really, I don't want to say hipster-type place, but just kind of...
I think we're tougher than that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think we're really, the pride, the being, like, really enthusiastic about where you're from. With Georgetown, and especially surrounding noise, we don't look at that as such a bad thing, because I think we're proud of the toughness of industrial strength. And that's, I think, happens to be an attitude that carries through into art and other things that people produce in Georgetown. But you look at other neighborhoods. I'm not gonna start anything. But you might think they're a little prettier than the industry and the how far out you are here in Georgetown.
So would these neighborhoods be up on top of a hill, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm not. I know that we are 12 feet above sea level here.
Well, there's something really gritty and cool about Georgetown, and I spent a lot of time just walking around and seeing things, and it's cool. I was telling you this before, that you actually live in a village because you know people. You went to the grocer. You were making borscht, and you were talking to him about the progress of that, and he was getting dill in specifically for you to add to this. And it was just like this update. You'd call him on the phone. Is it in yet? And you'd stop by and, okay, Kyle, here it is, and hope it works out. How is it different than some small village in some part of the world where people know each other? I think that's the coolest thing, and yet here you are in a city.
Well, absolutely. And people are very conscious here, I think, with living, and we know we're in an urban environment, but people, even in the neighborhoods, the houses and stuff, there is a lot of farming and urban kind of movements that people want to keep things local and support the community. And again, Georgetown isn't, I guess, the strongest contingent we have is the Merchants Association, but because we're a part of the city, we're not a separate part of the city proper.
There's a dog right next to you.
Hello.
Do I know you? Okay.
We're just getting scoped out.
We're sitting in a park, and dogs do come up to you sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
Continue.
We are part of the city, but we don't have, like, a particular representation, So that we have that community in other ways with the businesses and the kind of people that we bring into town and the activities. There's a lot of festivals and street fairs and stuff that we really celebrate what we're about here in Georgetown. And, having lived here a couple of years, I'm really starting to feel a part of it, and I really, I like the attitude, I like being so close to the regular city, but not being a part of that as well, being a little removed from sort of the super fancy parts, because, people with that are a little more genuine, I guess down to earth, working on projects and kind of getting their hands dirty with whatever it is they do, I feel like they're interesting people. I don't know. It's an inviting atmosphere, and it's a sort of a vibrant, creative, place to work and be and live. And I guess the fact that we're surrounded by this stuff also kind of keeps that energy moving. We have our lives sort of paced by this pulse of the global economy and the local economy as well. So I really wanted to share that, I guess, because I felt it's really inspiring for me as a enthusiast with all the tinkering and things that I do, with whether it's photography or whatever.
Well, on that subject, yeah, you tinker a lot with photography, with old cars, with computers and telephones. Just today we were at the Museum of Communications,
yeah.
Which, we could spend a whole show talking about that. It basically is 1.5 floors of an old central office, an existing central office, one that's currently in use, filled with all kinds of really, really old telephone equipment. I'm talking step switches and telephones and everything you could imagine, plus lots and lots of documentation. It's world famous. Lots of people have come here to see it. And how did you get involved with that?
I found out about it on the internet. And it was very bizarre, but I was looking into something on the Wikipedia or somewhere about telephony and stumbled upon some results that included this place and decided I wanted to look it up and find out what it was all about. And I'd recognized the building from when I was a very young person, but I never really knew what it was in an intelligent adult way. So,
oh, wow. That's,
I've never seen that. That's a private jet, and it has the Deja Vu logo on it. It's a chain of strip clubs here in Seattle.
Oh, my goodness.
So apparently they have their own jet.
It's great. You can just sit here and see things come in and be amazed. I saw, a Korean jet yesterday that just looked really strange. It had a structure in the middle of it I'd never seen on an airplane before.
Yes. Yeah, the Korean Air, I don't know if it was a new plane or not. But
and if you get bored with that, just turn to the left, and you'll see freight trains going by, and Amtrak, and Sounder, and other things, and it's all kinds of surprises. And it's cool also because we've been sort of involved in the freight industry lately, and it's cool to see it all around you, see things being moved, people being moved, and you just feel like you're in the midst of a hub.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the Museum of Communications.
No, that's how I just lent my volunteerism to it. That's how I get involved. These things are around me. It's a piece of infrastructure. It's a building I recognized from when I was very young, and when I found out there was a museum there, and then I started living in this community, I was like, this is just as big a deal and loud a machine actually as the planes, trains, all these things around me where I live. So I started going. They're only open on Tuesdays, and I started going and listening to some of the older people there. I've had a really good relationship with some of the older people in my family, and I consider these guys an extension of that family. And so I've made that part of my routine. I mean, I'm sort of self-employed, and I have my own schedule, and I get to include certain things in that. And so I've made that a part of my life, volunteering at the museum, showing people about telephones and how the telephone company works and how the system works and how everything really is put together behind what is such an ordinary device to so many people. So I just sort of dove into it, and then I started seeing friends. This was after school and stuff, so this was a bit later, and I started seeing friends I had met from 2600 meetings and stuff, people in the community, and so it was a great connection to work there with people. It's sort of like some of these camps where you see people you've seen in other contexts, and it there's cohesion, like you become stronger family in that sense. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to work with people that I know from other contexts, like the meetings and other parts of the hacker community, we can help with the museum and what the pioneers want to do and work from our perspective to enhance their activities as a nonprofit for the education and promotion of the telephone heritage in this country. So, our initiative as hackers can be, channeled to their initiative as historians and stuff. And I think they're comfortable with us because we're good people. And, they occasionally want to know what all's going on. But, it's that camaraderie and that fellowship initiative from the pioneers that I think they get along with us. They see young guys coming in and wanting to help, and they reach out and give you a cup of coffee and put you to work.
These guys, they're so cool. We came in this morning, and we just came upon them. We came, I guess, a little later than the others did, but they were all gathered around a circle around this big model airplane that one of them had brought in. And we're talking, these guys in their 70s through 90s, and they're as excited as a bunch of kids, just looking at this plane, asking all kinds of questions, testing it out, touching it.
This plane had pneumatic landing gear, so the landing gear would open up on a model plane. That's impressive.
Real planes are pretty impressive, too. I swear, I'm seeing planes going parallel within 10 seconds of each other. And I'm getting on a plane in a little while, too, so this sort of makes me feel more comfortable, I guess, just seeing it all at work. And it's something that you've always, like, talked to me about the allure of flight, even though it can be kind of frightening sometimes. But when you're from Seattle and you travel to the rest of the world and you see planes, it kind of brings back memories of home, right?
Yeah. I feel like they're a part of me, you know. I've grown up here. It's been a part of me my entire life, mm-hmm. you know, and Boeing was here long before I was, you know, even a dream. So when I'm traveling, I tend to feel comfort in seeing different planes that I recognize. Even when I'm on the ground and they're, you know, way up in the sky, I know that part of where that American industry and magic, actually, you know, flight and all of that, is somewhere overhead or nearby. And
that's a FedEx plane. I don't think he's going to this airport.
I was
going to
mention that earlier. FedEx is at SeaTac. Along with USPS, all the mail, if you don't already know, is on commercial flights.
I've never seen a USPS plane, so I guess that would explain it.
For instance, your flight will perhaps have a bunch of mail. They throw it in with the baggage, and that's just the post office gets a itinerary of all the flights, and they get to choose what planes, and they have their own system.
You know, I don't think there's a moment where there isn't something above us in the sky just flying around. Not another helicopter. I don't know which one that is. And there's another plane right above us now. Pretty high up. You might not hear that one.
Yeah, he's way up. I think he's going to SeaTac.
It's amazing. It's just so incredible. I could just watch this all day. And, you know, the trains alone I could watch all day. But
right.
This is... And here's another one. Look at this. What's...
Yeah, some kind of freight. Small, little mosquito kind of plane.
Very incredible. The Museum of Communications, amazing place, but there's also hacker spaces that you're involved in as well, which are also really, really cool. You showed me those.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to. I was so excited. You know, these hacker spaces have been popping up all over the world, and I also realized there were a couple in the state, and some have opened up since. I'm even thinking about opening up some kind of space to collaborate with my friends and people that are interested in the same kind of projects as I am. So I took you to HBL on Saturday, HackerBot Labs, to show you just a little bit of what goes on there. And there's a lot of tools and projects and people. You got to meet different people and see the different tools and rooms that we're building. The thing about HBL is people are really willing to help and really willing to explain things in sort of a non-confrontational way and in an approachable way.
And same thing at the Telecommunications Museum.
Yeah.
These phone guys from the past that used to be in the phone company, they'll explain anything you want to know about. They're very good with that.
Absolutely. And you've got to listen to people that have skills with that kind of stuff, you know, because that stuff disappears. It's not... Is he coming around for a second time?
It looks very similar, but...
All right, we're going to keep an eye.
What kind of plane is that up there?
That's a local commuter flight, Horizon or Alaska.
So, hacker spaces, all kinds of projects being worked on, all kinds of people doing creative things.
Yeah, they've got infrared photography that we're doing. There's people with the high voltage. We're doing decapping and some microscopy stuff. We're doing a lot of machining and milling, and I was doing soldering for some vehicle projects that I'm doing, putting some LEDs, and some of it was made for incandescent light bulbs.
How do you do it all?
Well, I don't keep a lot of paper around, and the notes I do take are important, and I do take notes. So, and lists. I make lists. So, little things I sketch down, the go get this, run this errand, and then it's scheduling, and running that into a schedule. You know, if you're going to plan your own schedule, plan it right, and do, you know, as much for yourself, you know, to make it as much you as it could be, because no other position in the world could ever do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wealth right there. If not material wealth, you know, a kind of wealth you can't acquire through anything else. So, I don't know, I appreciate having that power, having that freedom. And so I just make a good schedule and try to include as much of these errands. And there's so much crossover, I think, in a lot of my interests. So that's helped keep things going. And I change around a lot. I don't want to do one thing. I want to keep myself stimulated, so I try to do multiple things so that when I need a break from something, I can go and do something else. That always I like to be able to come back to something and not feel pressure that I have to just do this forever and ever or just do that forever and ever. I have a broad spectrum of things I want to do. Sometimes I want to do things faster. Sometimes I want to do, but this is life. You got to make the right choices. And, things are slow, but there's also a lot of things that have been changing quickly and developing. So I've been really happy to work with you and share and travel and tell this story about kind of where I come from after people having heard a lot about, just our antics and where we've been recently. Well, this is sort of where I come from. So that's really neat to share. And that's kind of how I get things done and such a way that I can go out and explore with you or do other things. So every day is kind of an adventure. I look forward to going and tinkering or doing, picking up a skill or working on a skill like soldering or doing any number of things. And I don't know, I keep it in my head, my vision and my interests. So that's kind of my motivation, is just kind of moving ahead with different projects.
It seems like a very inviting, welcoming, creative place to be, filled with energy after experiencing all of that. Not unlike going to Europe, actually. It's kind of really cool to see how people are able to just get things done their way.
Well, contrary to what I have heard, people in the Northwest do things. And I mean work. I mean produce. I mean create. I mean make it happen. I know there's sometimes a perception that only much larger cities are where, real innovation and activity occurs, but sometimes it takes an environment like this to do to make other kinds of progress, and that's just where I'm coming from. And
this guy's coming about. What's this all about? He's just showing off at the radio, isn't he? We see you. We're aware of you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Looking down, you see a lot of planes parked, and I can tell what a 747 looks like because it says on the tail 747. Normally they don't do that, right? Because they normally put the logo of the plane there, but because these are new planes,
these are the ones being tested for certification.
So it doesn't concern you that planes being tested above your head to see if they work properly or anything like that?
Well, I hadn't really given it. They do a good job.
Most of them pass the test.
Yeah, I mean, they're really good machines. I mean, incredible machines. And I think we have really good test pilots. And
that's not a private. That's a prop plane, right?
Yes. Yeah. Prop plane with the wing below the fuselage. It has retractable gear.
Almost on cue, the helicopter passing right by.
Small helicopter.
Unreal. I do want to stay out here for another huge jet, though, just to feel that jet blast one more time. You could spend all day just sitting out here, but you managed to find every single hill in Seattle and walk us up it. But the city is so cool and busy and filled with diverse stuff, different kinds of people and food and adventures. It was Pride weekend, so that was really incredible, too, to seeing the many thousands of people who showed up for that, echoed worldwide, of course. So really, it's a very dynamic place, filled with life and energy and youth.
Yeah, I was really happy to be able to show you the market and the Capitol Hill area and the other neighborhoods in downtown. We walked everywhere. I showed you the public library.
It's one thing. I mean, we noticed how much we could walk because the one thing I could say, I'm not going to say this as a criticism because it's just a difference, but it was around midnight, and we noticed that a lot of the streets were very, very quiet, and suddenly you couldn't find the light rail to go anywhere. It shut down.
There were buses, but not very many of them. And it was amazing. We walked down these streets, and we saw all these different things, buildings, and parts of the city, different parts of the city. It evolved as we went from the Midtown area, filled with all kinds of businesses and things, to sort of the industrial sections and residential sections and hills and valleys and things like that. And it was all just fascinating.
And it was a... It was a funny night, too, because I think it was Sunday night, so, and, you know, after a big weekend, I guess, I don't know, the buses shut down for a couple hours or something like that, but it was manageable, and I think we got all the best of transportation. I think you were able to come here and not be on the highway once.
That's true.
You were not on the highway once while you were here.
Now, you have a car. We were driving around a bit, too, and you were showing the outskirts of the city as well, and that was all really interesting. Yeah, seeing the roads... From a car's perspective, is cool, but we didn't need to use the highways.
Yeah, I mean, you might have been on a smaller road here, but you know, to get around in the neighborhoods, but not on the interstate. So, but we did every other form, including walking around like that. And my attitude, I don't know, I tend to bicycle when I'm, you know, in my normal grind, and that's efficient for me to get around.
And that's another incredible thing that you're involved in is bicycling. You bicycle everywhere, and you go up some of the hills that we were walking up. I was struggling to walk up the hills. You bicycle up these damn hills almost every day.
Right.
And it's just such an incredible way to stay in shape and just to get around. It is the most economically feasible way of transportation that there is. And so many people here bicycle, and I got to say, they really know the rules. I see people here that... they stop for lights occasionally. That's always good, but they're just aware of what's going on. They don't take foolish chances, and it's a healthy environment for that kind of a thing. So yeah, that's a great thing to be involved in.
Yeah, Seattle's not bad to walk around in, and the weather's been so good. It's cool and pleasant, and to just chat and end such a big weekend and a big day. I think that was the best. I don't know. There's so much more. You definitely, I would say come back and take a regional train and go to some of the other big cities, definitely down south, in Tacoma and stuff like that. But, I wanted to give you a taste of my normal week, which involves a lot of like the hacker spaces or the museum or just biking around, whether it's, on my tall bike or on another bike around.
Okay. You brought it up. You ride a tall bike. However did you get into that? What exactly is a tall bike?
A tall bike is a bike with a frame or two welded to the top, and the handlebars are extended so that you can steer from very high above the ground, and it's much higher than like an ordinary seat would be. And you climb up and ride around, and if you have to stop, you need to jump off, or you have the possibility of crashing. And it's kind of a neat way to get around, and I've heard that it historically was a way of lighting lanterns.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting. Okay, I don't know how you would manage to maneuver the thing and stop, and although, we rode to Hackerbot Labs the other night, in the middle of the night. I was on a regular bike, you were on a tall bike. I was amazed how fast you were going on the tall bike. You were in front of me. I was sort of, keeping behind to make sure you were okay. But wow, you're going pretty speedily there, as fast as a regular bike.
It's more metal, definitely, but I did put some 27s, which are very big wheels on it, and so the way the gear is, it's pretty hefty as far as your pedaling. Each pedal takes a little bit of work, but you get a lot of spin per pedal, and it's a really fun way to go, especially to go in the neighborhood, just to go to the hackerspace and work on some stuff. To me, that's fun. I can just jump on the tall bike and ride over. And in fact, the two bikes that I welded on top of another, it's a three bicycle tall bike. So there's two bikes on top of another. Those ones were actually acquired from the lab, and then I just repurposed them as a tall bike. So I just welded it up and made it work, and that's how I ride around in the neighborhood. I have other bikes to get around the region. If I need to get way downtown quickly or down south, that's another route. My neighbor had a tall bike, and you kind of, I guess, by osmosis, you have to build a tall bike once you're here. Just for anyone asking,
be prepared to build your tall bike if you come to Georgetown.
Yeah, I'd really like to ride it. I don't know if I'm going to have time this visit because I do have to get on my plane, and a trip to the emergency room just doesn't fit into that.
You know, 5 hours on a plane with a broken wrist or something just would not be fun.
I'll get there one day.
Yeah, it's a fun thing, and, you know, it's just like riding a bike.
Well, it is riding a bike, except you're riding three bikes and somehow not killing yourself in the process.
Once you pick it up, you never forget. So, you know, we'll get you on a tall bike pretty soon here. So.
That seems to be the hardest thing when you're, you know, on it. It's like, oh, my God, how do I get off this thing?
You can lean up against something and brace yourself. And
what if there isn't anything to lean up against? I saw you approaching a traffic light. Right. Traffic light was red. There's traffic going through the intersection.
Right.
What do? You have to sort of circle slowly.
You go in circles. It's a holding pattern.
And then there was one time where you sort of had a bad fall from, or just a bad dismounting because of, I think, an intersection, right?
I've had two or three of those so far, which is, you know, a badge of honor. You gotta fall once or twice. But one was at the top of a hill going into town. I was just into town, and I stopped. There was a car approaching in the lane, and then there were people on the corner at the crosswalk. So I couldn't jump up onto the crosswalk with the bike. I couldn't be where the car was next to me, and I ended up just falling over in front of these people at the sidewalk. I put my right leg out, but, you know, that's a long ways. You know, it's not like you can put your right leg out on a regular bike and, like, that's 6 inches, your foot hits the ground. Okay, you're now using your foot as a stand, and you're standing basically on the concrete. But it's more like 4 feet for that right leg to brace your foot. And when it hits, you know, if you don't flex it, it's a tough landing.
You're landing on one foot, not two.
Buckle and then fall onto your side.
Yeah, if you fall on 2 feet, it's one thing. If you're landing, putting all your weight on one foot, that can really not go well.
Yeah, so I basically fell over. The other time I came back, I was actually behind my building, and some guy pulled up in his Firebird, and I dropped the bike on his car in front of me. I bailed off to the back. I was going to go around him, and then the decision wasn't fast enough, and this is on gravel behind a building. Did not work out, and I ended up dropping the bike and bending the wheel pretty good. He was fine with it, though. He wasn't upset. So that was the other big spill. I've been mostly fortunate since. I don't think there's been much else other than that on the tall bike, but it's one of the forms of transportation I normally use. And I don't know, I think we hit it all. You know, you were able to see an example of all of what's going on here and how we get around.
And is this a huge plane coming now, right on cue?
This is a military.
Oh, it's a military. See, that's got that thing up in the middle again, like the Korean plane. It said Turk something. Is that a Turkish plane?
It's a Turkish Air Force, some kind of aerial reconnaissance or communications plane. I don't really know exactly. But yeah, those are a service tier. I think that we have a contract with the Turkish military. And the maintenance is done here on those, or whatever. They operate out of this facility. So.
Would it be as interesting watching the approach to JFK or Newark or something, seeing all these different kinds of planes coming in? Because I've never been aware of this before. I don't know of an airport like Boeing Field on the East Coast. Is there an equivalent?
Yeah, I mean, right, there's Teterboro, right?
Teterboro, really? Teterboro is...
Aviation.
Well, it's sort of like a private airport. I didn't think it was interesting, though. I thought
that's the kind... I mean, they have more diverse stuff, I think. They're smaller. But general aviation airports, because, see, I don't think there is a parallel. I'm saying that's the closest, is like a big general aviation airport.
This is a big airport. It seems a big airport.
The distinction is that this airport, not only is it a general aviation airport, but a major airplane manufacturer operates out of here, which is very unique. And also, there's just there's a capacity for commercial and, like, unusual planes to land here, but it's not purposed for that. It's not a hub for major airlines. It is an air, but it hosts airlines. So it's a bit of a quandary. Like, there's some things it does do, other things it doesn't do. Yes, there's commercial planes that land here, but they're here because the manufacturer is here, not because there's people, you know, 300 at a time getting off the plane. Now, there are other flights. You can buy tickets through Kenmore or that airline I mentioned before that does, like, maybe a trip to Idaho or something. Or, you know, a bush trip. Say you want to go out hunting or you're a photographer and you need to get out in a unique place, they'll take you. You know, you can buy tickets from them, but that's like an 8-person plane or 6-person, whatever their plane capacity is. So there is passenger stuff, but it's not in the way you'd see at, like, JFK. So in that sense, I think it'd be very hard to come up with a parallel. The reason I would say Teterboro or, like, general aviation in general is that's the preponderance of stuff that goes on here at Boeing Field. Yes, there's commercial flights. Yes, there's some military. Yes, there's, you know, shipping and freight companies. But the majority of it, as far as volume, would be these little prop planes and perhaps, like, personal or business jets, stuff like that. That's generally, like, the highest volume, I think, that comes through here. But Boeing probably has a fair amount, too, as far as, you know, just stuff that needs to be worked on. So I don't know. That's the best example I can come up with. So maybe it's not so good, but that's why.
It's a magical place. And, Kyle, I just want to thank you for sharing it with our listeners. And
absolutely, no problem. I'm happy to share. And I'm hoping that everyone enjoyed it. And if they find themselves out here, that they appreciate what we've been able to talk about.
And we're back live in the studio. That was Kyle and myself out in Seattle back in mid-June, just hanging out next to Boeing Field, hearing all the airplanes go by, talking about technology and industry and just life in general. Kyle joins us now live from the very same place. Kyle, you there?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Isn't that you heard the recording?
It's amazing, E.
Yeah, it is. You know,
it's natural when we were doing it, and gosh, to listen back, there's so much in there, and really, there's other things I would elaborate on. It's just cool to go back and listen, because I agree with so much of what I was able to say.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad you still agree with yourself, because that is important. I do, too, because, you know, I went in there not knowing what it was going to be like to be so close to all this industry, and it was, I was talking to Finn in the other studio about this just a little while ago, and it can be comforting. It can be something that's really beautiful in many ways. Just to see life from that perspective. So I'm glad I did it. It was very, very cool. Now, I was talking to you today, this morning, actually, and something else, something's always happening there, but there is this big commotion with a different kind of airplane, right?
F-16.
Uh-huh. And were you being invaded or disciplined or something?
right. You'd think, with the roar of sound that came in, but actually, what we've got going on out here this weekend is Seafair, which is a big aquatic celebration out here in the summer.
You guys always have something going on, some kind of fair or celebration or something.
Right, and actually, the real competition that goes on with Seafair is the hydroplane races, which is sort of a unique event.
Mm-hmm.
These are jet-powered boats, and they do the big hydroplane races. They also have an air show, and part of that component is the Blue Angels, who are here officially. They had one come in yesterday at 8 a.m., and then the remaining five, plus their mothership, big personnel plane, came in, and they've officially landed, and they're going to start practicing and be here all week.
And that just happened to occur while we were talking on the phone. I heard this tremendous sound of airplanes going by.
And, I didn't realize it was this week, and it was amazing. I thought I'd heard one come in last night and sort of dismissed it as maybe some of these guys with the, as I'd said in the recording, the private, you know, military plane they just take out for a spin on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was the plane coming in yesterday, at 8, and then these 6, when I looked out the window, were coming in for the first time. And I thought maybe they were already here or it was happening later, but this was their official first landing here. They're not even practicing yet. They're probably just relaxing and getting ready for a busy week.
Well, just to represent our area a little bit and show that Kyle doesn't have all the fun, while you were having military planes arriving in your area, we were having Britney Spears arrive in our area. She was spotted in Port Jefferson.
And no way.
Yeah, in fact, well, she's doing a concert at Nassau Coliseum right before its destruction, I understand. And what
part of it?
people are talking about seeing tour buses in Port Jefferson today. I saw two tour buses. I assume they were hers because they were being led by a Port Jefferson constable, and they were at the Setauket Fire Department. So maybe she was visiting and saying hi to the firemen or something like that. But then later on, when I was driving through Port Jefferson again, they had Main Street all closed off, and I looked down Main Street, and there was a fire truck in the middle of the street. And I was saying to myself, my God, they didn't let her drive a fire truck, did they? Because, you know, it's the kind of thing she would ask to do, and you can't say no. So you got to be polite. Okay, Brittany, you can take the fire truck, drive it around, but please don't get into an accident in the middle of Port Jefferson. And I don't know what happened. I'm sure we'll hear about it in the papers. But, yeah, we have fun, too. We don't have jets flying around, but we have, what's the term? People living in the fast lane. Yeah, those people. They hang out. It's true. Yeah. But in any event, okay, so that was our Seattle show. Now, we just found out something interesting today, or exciting today. We got our visas for another voyage we're taking. Your first dictatorship, I believe.
Yeah.
Cool. We're going to be, after the CCC Congress, or I'm sorry, the CCC camp, we're going to be heading to Poland, Belarus, and the Ukraine. Belarus, of course, being the last dictatorship of Europe. And I say that with all due respect, because I've been there twice before, and it's interesting to walk around and just see how people live in a place like that. I'm sure we'll have all kinds of observations and unique perspectives. But if there's anybody out there from any of those countries, Poland, Ukraine, Belarus, please write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to meet up, have you show us your particular favorite spots, and it's a chance to, I guess, open a window to the world and share your country with our listeners.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I have no idea what to expect, and credit where credit's due. I mean, if they're a dictatorship is what you might say technically, then so be it, you know?
Well, in order to get into this country, you can't just walk into the country. You have to be invited, and you get invited by having a travel agency make a hotel reservation for you. But that's not the end of it. You have to present your papers at either the consulate or the embassy, and they have to approve you. You have to submit a passport photo and pay the fee and all that kind of business. And it takes a week, and for a week you don't have your passport because they're processing it, and you're never really sure, was I approved, was I rejected, until it comes back and you see the full page visa in your passport. It's an exciting thing.
Yeah, I've never had a visa before, so I was looking at it this morning. It's pretty interesting.
Technically, every stamp is a visa. Technically. But this,
okay, all right.
This is a full page.
That's true, because each page is labeled visa.
Yeah, this is a full page sticker. So they take up the entire page, and it's all written in Cyrillic, and it's got little holograms, and it's definitely impressive, a conversation starter.
Yeah, very interesting, and I don't know, it's going to be quite a bit of new experiences, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm packing too, getting ready, trying to figure out what kind of photos I want to take, and how best to set myself up, but I'm really thrilled, Ian.
You know, I was packing too, and I was—I do this thing where I walk around and I sort of assess what's in my house. Should I take this? Do I need to get this before I leave? I'm just sort of walking around, looking in various rooms. Let me just say, cats are very perceptive, because apparently that is exactly the same way I walk around when I'm about to grab my cat to take him to the vet. So he's all of a sudden is like, I'm not having any part of this. I'm moving away from you. And I'm like, what? What did I say? What did I do? And I realize this must be the same body language that I exhibit when I'm about to do that.
Right.
So, wow.
That's great.
Yeah, it really is something. I have no intention of taking him to the vet. Not now, anyway. So I'm trying to make that clear, but I don't think he believes me. Anyway, so Kyle, we only have a minute or so left, but anything you'd like to convey to our audience? Any momentous things that have happened recently?
Oh my goodness, put me on the spot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah,
momentous things. Well, I mean, all kinds of momentous things. I'm really thrilled at some of the projects we've been able to finish.
The Hacker Calendar, of which you are one of the photographers. You're half of the photographers of the Hacker Calendar.
Right.
That's
right.
Being debuted at DEF CON this weekend coming up, which is a huge hacker conference in Vegas. Go to thehackercalendar.com to see an example of Kyle's work.
Yes, absolutely. And we've been had a flurry of activity with these kinds of things, and we're just going to have to continue. And I don't know, going out and getting some perspective, I think, will help us be as productive as we've been when we come back.
Absolutely, and that's why we like to appeal to our listeners to give us suggestions as to
absolutely
what to do, where to go, things like that. I already get so many good suggestions from people, and then we're able to give those suggestions to more people, and it's just it's a really good thing, really a lot of fun. So anyway, Carl, it's been great talking, and looking forward to the camp, obviously, the Chaos Camp, which happens every 4 years in Germany, and all the fun things that will follow.
Absolutely.
All right. Again, write to us, otw@2600.com. That is our email address, and we'd love to hear from you. Until next week, when we'll be doing a show from Denmark. This is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have yourselves a good night.
I don't need a passport to walk on this earth. Anywhere I go, because I was made of this earth. I'm born of this earth. I breathe of this earth. And even with the pain, I believe in this earth. So I wake up every morning and I'm stepping on the floor. I wake up every morning and I'm stepping out the door. I got faith in the sky, faith in the one, faith in the people rocking underneath the sun. Because every bit of land is a holy land. And every drop of water is a holy water. And every single child is a son or a daughter of the one earth mama and the one earth papa. So don't tell a man that he can't come here, cause he got brown eyes and a wavy kind of hair. And don't tell a woman that she can't go there, because she prays a little different to a God up there. You say you're a Christian cause God made you. You say you're a Muslim cause God made you. You say you're a Hindu and the next man a Jew. Then we all kill each other cause God told us to. No, hello, hello.
Vamos ter que ser de dança na. Yeah!